This is episode 358 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, November the 14th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
Look how technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. I'm Andrew McComb, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Steve Jobs certainly had it in for Adobe's Flash, and last week it seemed some of the campaigning may have finally come to fruition, with Adobe announcing that it was no longer going to develop Flash for mobile devices. Steve was adamant that there was no need for anything to come between the device's operating system and its applications, which is one of the main reasons behind the company's refusal to allow Flash on its iGadgets. Last week, Adobe announced that future work with Flash on mobile devices will be focused on enabling Flash developers to package native apps with Adobe Air for all the major app stores. Adobe will no longer continue to develop Flash Player in the browser to work with new mobile device configurations following the upcoming release of Flash Player 11.1 for Android and BlackBerry Playbook. The company will continue to provide critical bug fixes and security updates for existing device configurations. Adobe, like others, will now focus on HTML5, the next generation of HTML, which is the language behind today's modern internet browsers, and it will still continue Flash for PCs. HTML5 has become the new flavor for rich media development, and with this new direction of Adobe, combined with the growth of mobile devices to access the web, it would seem as if Flash may become a depreciated programming language eventually. Flash Player 11 for PC browsers just introduced dozens of new features, including hardware-accelerated 3D graphics for console-quality gaming and premium HD video content protection. Adobe said Flash developers can take advantage of these features to reach more than a billion PCs through their browsers and to package native apps with Air that runs on hundreds of millions of mobile devices through the popular app stores, including the iTunes App Store, Android Market, Amazon App Store for Android, and BlackBerry App World. It's worth noting that Flash is proprietary software, meaning Adobe looks to earn revenue from its users, where HTML5 is not. HTML5 is just the way of the new browsers we load on computers and gadgets which allow us to enjoy the content-rich world of today's internet.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adobe finally kills off Flash for mobiles. Apple is still ironing out the bugs in iOS 5. Illegal game downloads are on the rise and Steam's gaming portal forum is hacked. First up though, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Apple's iOS 5 is struggling with battery issues. The TIO reports complaints against telcos are up 17% compared with this time last year. Federal police investigate leaks in the aborted Australian Network TV contract. Popular games network Steam has its user data compromised by hackers, and Optus announces broadband pricing for its NBN customers. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Early adopters of Apple's latest operating system for iPhones, iOS 5, are still complaining that battery longevity is a serious issue. Many users have complained that the supposed iOS 5.0.1 battery fix has done little, if anything, to remedy the issue, with some users on Apple forums even complaining that battery life is now worse after the upgrade. In a statement, Apple said a small number of customers have reported lower than expected battery life on iOS 5 devices. We have found a few bugs that are affecting battery life, and we will release a software update to address those in a few weeks. Despite a recent inquiry by the Australian Communications and Media Authority into misleading advertising by telcos, the Telecommunication Industry Ombudsman last week reported that nearly 200,000 new complaints had been made in the last financial year. This figure is up 17% from the same period a year earlier, and the ACCC said that misleading advertising was still a major headache for consumers. Here's Mr. Rod Sims, Chairman of the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission.
The telco companies particularly seem to be involved in a bit of a race to the bottom in terms of the way they advertise, particularly selling a bundled product but only focusing on one aspect of the product and therefore sending out misleading messages about the true cost of the product. So we still find that behaviour continuing, and yes, we are disappointed.
Mr. Sims went on to say that some telcos had adapted their behaviour, but the ACCC still believed that problems existed with misleading advertising. The ACCC said the industry had now been put on notice to make sure its advertisements are unambiguous. The federal government has cancelled a tender process for the so-called Australia Network TV contract worth $223 million. The Australia Network is a government-run international TV service intended to showcase Australia's democratic values to viewers in the Asia-Pacific region. It's currently run by the ABC, but competing with Sky News to retain the contract. Now, News Corporation papers have published leaks about the tender, which the Communications Minister, Senator Stephen Conroy, says has fatally compromised the process and forced the government to cancel the tender entirely. In a media release, Senator Conroy said he was acting on the advice of the Australian government solicitor, and the compromise was such that a fair and equitable outcome may no longer be able to be achieved. The Australian Federal Police is now investigating the source of the leaks. Popular video game network Steam has had its user database compromised and has advised users to closely monitor their credit card activity and statements. Used by around 35 million people, the network is owned and operated by Valve and hosts and distributes games to its members. Steam said on Thursday last week intruders had obtained unauthorized access to a database in addition to online forums, and that the database contained information including usernames, passwords, game purchases, email addresses, billing addresses, and encrypted credit card information. Steam said there was no evidence that encrypted credit card numbers or personal information had actually been taken by the intruders, or that the protection on credit card numbers or passwords had been cracked. Independent security experts have advised users to change passwords, monitor credit card statements, and to consider removing their card numbers from Valve servers. And Optus has announced pricing for customers on the national broadband network. A number of internet and telephony services will be available, sold either as discrete products or bundled together. Optus's internet prices will start at $39.99 per month for 20 gig peak and 20 gig off peak at the lowest bandwidth of 12 megabits per second down and 2 megabits per second up, available when bundled with Optus postpaid mobile. Other plans include $59.99 for 50 and 70 gig, $69.99 for 75/75, and $79.99 for 250 up and 250 down. Each of these plans is at speeds of 25 megabits per second down and 5 megabits per second up, and each is discounted by $10 when bundled with an Optus mobile service. Technology editor at ZDNet, Mr. David Brow, said there have been no pronouncements, doorstops or press releases from Malcolm Turnbull, Paul Fletcher or other Liberals slamming the Optus pricing. And for good reason, said Mr. Brow, since Optus has proved that mass market NBN services can be delivered at reasonable prices. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
In Adam's view this week, there is an Adobe alert.
To which I say,
it's the same arrogance and lack of respect for anybody, really.
Who are you and what have you done with Graham Callaghan?
Fresh results, apparently.
Is it a Mac?
No.
Then it ain't for me.
It's not for you, you're right. Oh, let's not start with
well, that.
I had a friend of mine who's...
Which I also missed while I was away.
Yeah, you're lucky.
The first step is always to run Microsoft Update to make sure you've installed all the latest updates. Security patches.
There's two flavours you can get in this camera. And,
chocolate?
Yes, chocolate and strawberry.
You mentioned Vimeo just then.
Vimeo, yes.
They're in my bad books.
The sort of technology that's probably emerging at the moment is HTML5.
Some people are complaining that their phone would only last a matter of hours.
Welcome to HTC World.
Correct.
Maybe it's like me, it's just feeling tired and worn out.
Why does he do this to himself?
I don't know.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, and sitting across from me, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan this evening. How are you both?
Hello, Andrew. I'm very well, thank you.
Well, Andrew, how are you this week?
Yeah, good. It's Monday already, if you're listening to us live. If you're not, it's not Monday. So, yeah, it's beginning of the week for us. And
you've started off by confusing people already.
Well, that's what I do best, isn't it, Graham? You keep telling me things like that. So, it's been an interesting week. I've had a lot of fun with technology this week, to say the least.
What a big week it's been in technology. What have you been doing?
I've been rebuilding. I keep buying these computers on Grays.
very happy with Grays, but yeah, go on.
You need to have an enforced spending limit on Grays, I think,
along the
line with the government's regulations in other areas.
I have a maximum bid spend on Grays, but unfortunately, computers are going very cheap on there these days at the moment. So
that's because computers are cheap in general.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? So I ended up purchasing a couple for the office because with a few projects we've got coming up, it's good to have some, you know, word processor / email / general office grunty little, nothing super wisp, nothing editing type.
Right.
And you can pick them up for anywhere from 30 to sort of 50 or 60 bucks online on Grays at auction. I've got a bidding on an auction which finishes in the middle of the show.
Yeah, watch out for that buyer's premium, though. That kills you if you're not careful.
That's 15%.
And the freight charges on top.
It depends on the particular auction. We're talking about graysonline.com, aren't we?
We are.
Which is an auction site that basically disposes of goods for people.
Yeah, pre-loved. Pre-loved. That's not the right word. Well, some reconditioned.
Depends
warranty
on the batch.
Warranty returns when they fix them up and resell them. And
sometimes they're those sorts of things. Sometimes they're damaged cartons and things like that. Sometimes they're businesses that have been wound up and getting rid of their stuff. So there's all kinds of different reasons why things might be on Grays Online.
Correct. Anyway, good place to pick up a bargain. Friday nights and Sunday nights are the best times to buy there. I've come to the conclusion with my experience over the many months I've been building there, because people have got better things to do with their time on those particular nights.
People Friday, other than you.
Friday they're in the pub, Sunday they're having quality time with their family.
But Dr. Ron says he's got an issue with them. What's your issue with them?
My issue is that I purchased a computer from them a couple of weeks ago and they sent it to me with faulty RAM.
Okay.
And I'm not happy about that.
Well, happy, Jan.
That can happen.
Yeah.
They're an auction house. They're not an IT house. They're not going to know whether the computer's got faulty RAM.
They would have. Well, that's right.
Depends who their supplier is or where it's
they,
come
they
from.
Do actually warrant what they sell, though, and they put stickers over the case. So if you open it, you're voiding their hardware warranties.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that they would power it up and make sure the thing starts and that it looks like it's okay.
At least blow any of the corporate information of the seller off their hard drives or whatever they do to them before.
But things
they
can happen in
out.
Transit. I mean, often a system will leave one place working fine and arrive in another place with a fault because of something's dodgy contact that's been moved about in transit.
Well, this was dodgy. This was mismatched RAM, wasn't even the
wrong. Oh, it was the wrong RAM entirely, not just faulty RAM.
That's right. I think they thought
that wouldn't happen in transit.
No,
that wouldn't happen in transit. You're right.
That damn pesky Australia postman, he keeps swapping my RAM out.
I think they thought they'd be clever and they'd advertise it as having 4 gigabytes, and they thought, oh, get some sticks, jam them in, yeah, power's up, that'll do, box it up, off it goes.
Okay.
So, but that's all right. Look, I've found the fault fairly quickly because it was quite obvious.
Yeah.
It would only stay powered up for about a minute, and then it would just reboot.
Oh, right.
And I thought, oh, this is a serious problem. It's either it's a driver issue or it's RAM or something fairly fundamental. So I was able to diagnose it fairly fast.
Yep. Well, my experience during the course of the week, I've come to love Windows 7 for no other reason than I had to install Windows XP on a few older machines. And let me tell you, the device drivers have really come of age, because the same machine with Windows 7, not an issue. Just found it all, worked, no issues whatsoever. XP, well, that was a completely different kettle of fish.
Well, you'd expect that. XP is an older operating system now. It's not that there's anything inherently wrong with it. It's just not going to have the drivers built in for the stuff that was built since it was released
in
2003 or
something. That makes you appreciate the new stuff. And having said that, last week's website of the week, which was ninite.com, thanks to Adam Turner, I've been trying that out, and that works absolutely wonderfully. It's a place where you can go to click all the boxes for all the programs you want to install onto your nice, fresh machine with a fresh install, like your web browsers, your CD burning software.
So I guess it would be nice if you're doing several machines and you want the same stuff on each one. You've got the one installer, you just move from machine to machine and puts all your little utilities and things on that you want. Does it let you set options in the individual utilities?
So no, it doesn't give you any options. It just installs them all with no tick boxes and things.
That would be
like
a problem to
no
me.
No pop-ups, no browser things. They promise you that.
Yeah.
So you don't get any
But you'd like to be able to set options like to not install the toolbar that comes with something, or to
They don't install toolbars.
Or when you install the codecs, not to do file associations, to leave your file associations alone when you install the codec packs.
I'll check that one, because I did install the codec pack. I'll see what happens. So,
which codec pack do you use, by the way?
Oh, the one that was on... Hang on, I'll have to log in and find out one of those.
You'll have to look it up.
One of the K-Lite versions.
Yeah, I think
the
K-Lite.
Okay. Yeah, there's one called CCCP, which...
That's the Socialist Republic of somewhere, isn't it?
Well, I think they're playing on the initials, but...
Has it got a yellow and red flag?
Not anymore.
Oh, okay.
I've found that one's got a good selection of codecs. It seems to work on systems I've been working on lately.
Oh, very good. Well, I must admit, I've just completely by the buyer type sort of thing, I discovered that the broadcast files that I work with and work, VLC can actually read them. I was over the moon.
Oh, VLC plays anything.
Nearly anything.
Yeah.
Not anything, nearly. I have found things. Apple ProRes, it doesn't like. It won't play Apple ProRes, but other than that.
Is there a lot of that floating about?
Unfortunately,
only,
in my game
only
there
in your office, yeah.
And even still, we don't have much of that. It's one of those things. But VLC, I love it. It's a wonderful piece of software for watching anything or listening to anything.
Yeah, yes and no. Yeah, not my favourite.
Okay.
What's your favourite?
Media Player Classic.
Yeah, I use Media Player Classic a lot.
Yeah, that's one of the things that works.
And to make Media Player Classic work, you have to have your codecs properly installed, whereas VLC is good for people who've got no clue. No offence, Andrew, but...
None taken.
because it's kind of got everything rolled in, but it doesn't force you to install the codecs properly so that the machine works properly. It kind of only works... VLC only looks after VLC.
Does Windows, this Media Player software that you speak of, does it play Flash?
I've no idea.
Flash Video is one of the ones we use at work quite a bit, and there's very few that play FLV files and stuff like that. So there you go. This is my work for you. You might have it on your machine there. You can try one.
Yeah.
See what happens.
I'll have a think
about
that.
Because that'd be interesting. Anyway. Yes, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tonight on the show, all sorts of interesting things. We'll do some Coro in a minute because I'm sure Dr. Ron's got some. Adam Turner's talking to Scott Lawson, the CEO of Fetch TV tonight, about the new apps that are coming up and what's going on with video on demand in this country and things like that. I think last week I alluded to Susan McLean coming in this week. She's not. I got my dates wrong. It's next week.
Whoops.
Yeah, whoops.
Ah. She's still coming in though, isn't she?
She said she was. Anything could happen. You know what? My people speak to your people and... a better offer comes along or something,
It would only be unforeseen circumstances.
Correct.
She's not the sort of person who would...
No, she's very punctual and dedicated to all that sort of thing, so it'd be good.
And she's been on Tech Talk Radio a couple of times before. She was one of the earliest guests that I remember on Tech Talk Radio back when we were, building up to what we are now.
Yes, haven't we come so far?
and she's a world expert on... cyber security issues and online bullying and that sort of
cyber safety.
Cyber safety. That's the phrase I'm looking for. Thank you, Dr. Ron.
If you've got young kids in the household, at school, cyberbullying is a real issue these days. Sexting and all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
We'll find out what's happening at the coalface, I guess, when Susan comes in.
She used to work with Victoria Police as in that sort of field, and she's since become a freelancer of sorts, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
The squeaky one's not with us this evening. Don't know where she is.
I just put out an all-points bulletin in the chat room, but she's not there
just
either.
Just pop your head out the studio door. There might be someone out there with the blueies on having a chat to her.
Yeah, I know where Lena is. She's hiding from me.
Why? What have you done?
Because I'm angry with Lena.
Oh, don't tell
me. I'm angry.
<You're> angry.
Sorry, that's someone else's
sounds
catchphrase,
like Dave,
isn't it?
Dave Hughes there for a minute.
Sorry, Dave.
I'm angry.
Yeah, she recommended that I should join this Steam thing and download these games like Portal.
Oh, and haven't we all been compromised?
Now my credit card's all been nicked.
You've been
and all
violated.
That sort of stuff. I
have. How do you feel?
Do
you feel violated?
Sony, I do. It's Sony all over again.
It's been a bad year for games people getting hacked, hasn't it?
Yeah.
That's why she hasn't fronted tonight. She's just
in
can't
hiding.
Can't face the music.
No, that's right. Lena, if you're out there, get in here so I can have a go at you for making me join Steam and getting all my details nicked.
Next week, you watch, she'll slink in as if nothing's happened.
Whistling, she'll go, dum-de-dum-de-dum, hi.
Got some Coro, Doctor, on?
Of course. feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is where to send it. Tristan, who's a long-time supporter of the program, he says via the contact form, "Hey guys, I heard Lena's little rant about restaurants not having websites."
Graham, she's got a lot. No wonder she didn't come in this evening.
Yeah, that's right. We're all gigging up on her. Graham took her to task as well last week. Does she never look anything up on the web?
She's collecting phone books as we speak.
"Most restaurants I've been on, I have been to, have websites. My in-laws have a restaurant cafe, and I was recently appointed to take over their website from someone they were paying too much to do too little with. I fixed it up and kept it up to date week by week. I've never managed or made a website before, and I found it a little daunting at first, but as I got used to it, I found it easy to keep going. I'm always thinking of new things to add and new ways of doing things with it. I'm limited in my technical knowledge, and learning HTML code has been difficult, but I've found that things aren't too bad with WYSIWYG editors. Their website uses WordPress. WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get."
Thank you.
So it's a graphical designer. Rather than writing it in a text editor in code, you can design it to some extent.
Okay, so for those who've been around for a few years, a Word on Windows these days is a WYSIWYG editor, and WordPerfect 5.1 on DOS on the old days is not.
That's right, because what you put on the screen wasn't what actually got printed out.
It's a concept.
It's a concept.
Some people remember.
Yep.
Oh, we all remember. DOS serves as a warning to people. "Their website uses WordPress," says Tristan, "and I use various plugins to keep it up to date. If you want to see it, it's at www.spanishflavors.com.au. If you have any suggestions at what I can do to make it better..."
They sell Greek food.
"Any feedback will..." No, it's Spanish.
Oh, sorry.
Did I say Greek flavors? Tristan, you have to bear with Andrew. You know what he's like by now. Any feedback will be greatly appreciated.
What was the URL? I'm typing it in. What? Spanish food?
Spanishflavors.com.au. Thank you, Tristan. Tristan, thank you for the feedback, and you're doing a good job with the website there. I haven't got any suggestions. Just keep doing what you're doing. Looks good.
Initial impressions, it looks nice, yeah.
Matt, via the contact form, says...
Maybe we can go there after our end of show party.
That's an idea.
It's in Adelaide. It's in Perth, I think, but
is
I'll be in
that.
With that.
Still an idea.
No problem at all.
Someone wanted us to go to Perth the other day.
Yeah, that's it. Matt, via the contact form, says, "Thanks for the tip on opting out of receiving phone books. I didn't realise you could do that."
Yeah, you can. You can opt out of most things.
You can, if you know how. "Whenever I get new ones, I take the old books out of the cupboard, unwrap them from the plastic, and chuck them in the recycle bin. The new phone books are then left wrapped. The new phone books are then left unwrapped in the cupboard for another year, until the next ones come along. I found the website to cancel books at www.directoryselect.com.au. However, the form wasn't working the time I tried it. I rang their 1-800 number, and I was able to cancel the phone books. The wife's happy too. No more squashed plants when they are delivered. Cheers, Matt."
You're going to do a lot of scouts out of a job. You realise that? You know, you remember they used to drive around the neighbourhood with their trailer on the back of some beat-up old car delivering phone books.
Scouts have got better things to do with their time than deliver phone books.
Yeah, well, what can I say?
Last but not least, Amir via the contact form says, "Hey team, as someone who's been working in e-learning on the development side for the last 6 years, and another two at the beginning in animating stuff for e-learning, I can assure you the predominant role in this sector is still played by Flash and ActionScript."
Yeah.
"Not because we're against changes, but only as HTML5 in its current state is simply just too immature, at least as far as tooling is concerned.
Just won't get into the schools through their e-learning developments. And play on their computers that they give the kids.
As Andrew said, it's super easy to add HD videos using a simple video tag."
It is, I've done it.
"Not yet that easy due to multiple codec standards of different browsers."
No. If you read WC3, it's all there.
"But if you think we can fulfill our customers' needs and educational designs with text videos, painfully created CSS3, canvas animations and JavaScript interactions, and still deliver everything at a reasonable price, think again."
Since that email was sent to us, Adobe has removed Flash for mobile. So it also it's no longer going to support it. You know how you were in my ear the other day, Dr. Ron, about how Adobe Flash 11.1 or something keeps downloading to your device?
And I keep uninstalling it and unchecking that checkbox that says automatically.
Well, apparently we're going to get that forever and a day.
No.
They're not going to develop anymore, so we're stuck with it.
It's so memory hungry.
Well, yes, it is. It is. But as I alluded to in the opening of the show, maybe this is what Steve wanted all along, to get rid of the man in the middle on mobile devices.
Maybe this is why.
Well, everyone should be focusing on HTML5. It's not hard. Bang the rocks together, guys.
Amir says, not that HTML5 can't possibly do that, but the tooling is super poor for the time being.
Yeah, it's infant's day. I agree with him.
The whole industry is harmed by Apple for not accepting the only real option we currently have, and for the sake of a technology that is going to be great.
Let's agree to disagree on that one.
But in some years to come. Regular and now podcast listener for a year. Thanks, Amir.
Thanks, Amir.
Always
thanks.
Good to hear correct opinions, even if they're wrong.
No, everyone has an opinion.
Graham. Amir, we'll take him out and shoot him after the program. And Andy.
One of the big problems with Flash and with the old way of doing things is that it's not compatible with alternative ways of reading things. So a website should be readable whether you're using a big screen or a small screen, or whether you're using a text reader to read words out, or whether you're using a braille screen to convert stuff to text. You Warlock. Have to have a text alternative.
Warlock just gave you a high five in the chat.
Thanks, Warlock.
You should call in, Warlock.
He
knows the phone number.
By using the new standards, you can make things that are much more accessible to people using different technologies to view your content.
Correct.
Last but not least, Andy B in the chat room says, let's see how many times my name gets mentioned on the show tonight. I'm aiming for 17.
He was very prolific tweeting in the thunderstorm.
Andy B.
Last night. That's good thunderstorm. Yeah.
Andy B.
That's three. Wasn't it? I saw your tweet come through at a bit after midnight.
Oh, yeah. It's like the storm came through. The kiddies didn't get up or anything. It was good, so... anyway, more good.
That's our correspondence for the week, Andrew. Oh, it is feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, so Adobe's going to stop doing Flash. That's pretty good. We probably don't need to go on about that. But if you had if you haven't caught up with all the goings on during the course of the week, the upcoming Flash Player 11.1 release will be Adobe's last for the mobile devices, small screen devices. So,
Yep. Start designing better websites, guys.
Yeah. So, all right. That was quick, wasn't it? iOS update fixes the Aussie twang problem. A lot of people have been complaining about Siri.
Do we have a twang?
Apparently. Even Lid in Palo Alto was saying that if she I think, what was it? Let me get her words right. Something she had to use the American or the English version or something like that.
Lid's problem was that the language
she had to
selected
swap.
Was tied to the geographic location in a way that it shouldn't be. So if you selected English Australian... It said it assumed you weren't in America. If you wanted Siri to assume you're in America, you had to select English US as the language. Now that's an unnatural tying together of two concepts that should be separate, Mr. Apple.
Yes, mutually exclusive. I agree.
They're not mutually exclusive, but they should be separate.
Yeah.
You should alienate
all the expats.
Well, that's right. You can be in one place, but you can speak a language that's from somewhere else. That's the location and the language shouldn't be tied together.
Mm. I agree. It makes sense.
Yes.
Why wouldn't it? So, Apple has pushed out iOS 5.0.1, which promises to improve the battery life as well.
But doesn't, as we heard in the news.
No. What happened, Dr. Ron? Why doesn't it fix the battery life? Is it a hardware-related issue?
We don't know. Some people complaining that it's worse now.
Oh, really?
With 5.0.1.
That can't be good.
No.
That can't be good.
That's what the people complaining are saying, too.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about broadband, too, because Optus, as you also mentioned in the news this evening, released their NBN prices. After lengthy negotiations, Optus has announced that it's going to start at $59.95 a month for a standalone package. Now, I had a look at the press release that they came out with during the course of the week. You can get them all sorts of flavors, bundles and nakeds, and then intertwined with their other packages, their fusion packages.
Yeah, bundled with your mobile phone service as well, if you want.
And I'd just like to put a caveat in here. Everyone be wary of the Optus broadband things. They've been hauled across the coals from the ACCC on numerous occasions about misleading. So please read the fine print.
They're not the only ones, to be fair.
Yes, I agree. Yes. But they've had their fair
hello,
share
TPG,
in,
if you're listening.
In recent times.
And the ACCC doesn't do anything either, to be fair. The toothless tiger that just puts them on notice time and time again.
Yeah. So
you've misled people again. You're very naughty again. We're not going to do anything about it again.
Oh, you're bitter and twisted about it too. But no,
it's factual.
There's a lot of it going about.
The ACCC have been ranting and raving for years about misleading advertising, but nothing's done time and time again.
Mm. So anyway, they've got a $39.99 naked when bundled with Optus Mobile, which gives you up to 40 gig. Can I just suggest that 40 gig on high-speed broadband is probably going to last your day, especially if you're into streaming and you want to give it a whirl and watch, content such as video online, and we all do.
Depends what you do, I suppose. Oh, I recognise that noise.
That could be Warlock. Hello, Warlock. Come in, Warlock.
Hi, how's everyone doing?
Oh, good. Good. We're doing well. How are you doing?
Awesome.
That's good. Thanks for joining us this evening. You managed find a microphone and give us a hoi. It's either you or Adam. Anyway.
Well, I'm glad you picked the better one.
Our lines are free to take your calls. So we're just talking about the Optus pricing for the broadband. So we've got a naked $39.99 when bundled with mobile, the Optus Mobile. Then you can go an extra $10. Actually, how's my maths? An extra $20 will get you up to 120 gig. And it varies from there on in. But have a look on their website and compare with others, because we're all starting to see these broadband plans come out. I think iiNet released. No, it wasn't iiNet. Was it Internode? Oh, I lose track.
iiNet did, yes.
Yeah, it was iiNet, was it? Yeah. So they're all starting to come out now. And I guess availability, when it's going to roll past your doorstep between now and the next 8 years, will be an interesting issue, really, won't it?
And as a number of political commentators said, deafening silence from the opposition, who are always slamming the NBN and the state of broadband and everything in Australia. But what this goes to show is that, look, realistic prices can be achieved.
Yes, this is a city prices, Turnbull's broadband. This was on ZDNet. I saw this go through. Although Shadow Minister Malcolm Turnbull has been mum on definite costs, Citigroup Global Marketing estimates that the coalition's broadband plan would set Australia taxpayers back approximately $16.7 billion and could be completed by the end of 2018. So, his sort of options are still quite pricey when you consider what's going on. And I think the main difference between what he was talking about was the use of existing technologies where possible, and a lot more wireless that's currently being used too for the NBN Co. So,
oh yeah, but these are realistic prices. This is good. I mean, $79.99 is probably akin to what you and I and Graham pay at the moment for our internet every month, but we're not getting speeds of 25 megabits per second down, and we're not getting quotas of like 500 gigabytes per month either. So this is realistic. This is good.
It is. But we've also got to bear in mind too that with the coming of speed, we'll start to use more and more online services such as streaming for our video content. Yep. Like Graham has, he's cut the cable, and you get all your content up the internet.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yep.
I love ABC iView.
It's good stuff there. But this is where it's all going to go. It's storing information sort of like in the cloud and watching it later, or what do you call it? You click it and watch it later.
Yep.
Which is really what a lot of these services are doing. And we're also seeing the tyranny of geospatial referencing being brought down, which means you can watch anything from anywhere. Don't forget that Google's YouTube are about to launch their television channels as well. So it's all happening.
That'll be interesting.
It's all going to come down the internet for us very shortly. It's funny, in the office today, I had a television executive with me who he used to be a CEO of a TV network, and I was showing him the wonders of how you can watch anything from anywhere day, and he was quite blown away with Hulu.
If
you've been tinkering with Hulu, there's nothing you can't watch on Hulu.
If you're in America, or if you know how to get around the restrictions.
Yeah, if you just go to unblock us, try the free trial, and you'll never go back. So there's all sorts of interesting ways around it.
But was he not aware of that already?
That's my point.
That's surprising, isn't it? You'd think somebody who'd worked in the industry and who had held a position like that would be aware of the technology and what it can do and how easy it is.
Yeah.
That I tend to do it is just do a search on Google for open proxy servers for the country. It's how I watch the latest series of Doctor Who on the BBC iPlayer before it came out. Just find a open proxy server, you change it in your web browser, and away you go. You don't have to subscribe to anything or pay money or anything like that.
How hard was it to set up, Warlock?
Very easy. You just go into your internet options and type in the IP address of the proxy server, test it out. If it doesn't work, delete it and find another one that does. I only had about two or three goes when I was watching the show. It streamed really fast. It didn't slow down or anything.
So that's fine for reasonable, you know, technologically aware users like yourself and like us. But for the average user, something like Unblock Us, which Andrew has been talking about, how much does that cost per month?
It's $5 a month.
$5 a month, and no mess, no fuss. You don't have to go searching for things. You don't have to...
They've even got a little program which you run, and it sets your settings for you. And if you set it, those settings in the router, which is where the internet comes into your house,
yep.
It applies to all your machines. So
that's right, yeah.
Everything's unblocked in your network, in behind your firewall. Which
you can't go wrong for $5, can you?
No, that's what I mean. For the amount of effort that you spend trying different proxies, you might try two or three before they work. You know, how much is that time worth to you?
Yeah, exactly. And it also means that you're not having to key it into all your browsers in all the different machines and things like that. So very handy from that point of view. So that was a bit of fun and games in the office today because, we've got a job in at work at the moment. We have to convert for one of the pay TV providers or the on-demand providers a whole heap of television shows because they don't even have the resources to do that themselves. They want us content creators to provide them with file server-ready apps or file server-ready media to go into their servers so that their apps can just click and download and start watching, so... Anyway, should we go back to the broadband? Because we got awfully distracted there for a minute. Optus feels a price squeeze on fixed broadband.
I blame Warlock.
Oh, no, he rang in the middle of it all. So it's just what happens. Optus has attributed a 6% hit to its fixed line consumer business revenues during the second quarter of 2012 financial year to a price squeeze in the market and declining average revenues. I don't know. Do you think revenues are falling away? Obviously, Optus do. Despite growing its fixed line user base by 4% to 972,000 subscribers across cable and ADSL, the unit was the only one to post a revenue loss during the quarter. The division's $321 million revenue came from a fraction of the total, $2.34 billion revenue. It got over the quarter. So, I don't know. We've got a fixed... I think we were talking about this tonight, Dr. Ron, before we came in, that we've got a fixed number of users in Australia. We're not sort of, you know, connecting more and more. I think everyone who's connected is connected, if that makes sense. We're just changing and churning a lot these days, aren't we?
That's right. Just changing and churning. Everyone that's got probably got, you know, this type of a service or who wants this type of a service has got it.
Yeah, well, take mobile phones, for example. Telstra.
There's not a new market. They can't just pull in hundreds of thousands of new customers every month.
No, you have to steal from your competitors.
Well, that's right. You have to churn people and you have to steal.
Vodafone.
Part of the problem is that the internet really, the internet pipe that they provide you is just a dumb pipe. But you can't really do a lot of add-on service. So unless you can bundle people into your mobile plans, your landline plans, your TV plans, IPTV and stuff like that, there's not really much upsell you can do with internet. So the prices keep getting more competitive and they keep going down and they run out of ideas for profit. So the NBN's sort of a bit of a blessing for them that way. They can jump the profit up a bit more for a while until it starts coming down again.
Well, you look at what Apple did with this, what's it, iMessage. You probably know a little bit about that. If you want to text...
bypassing SMS.
Yeah, it just bypasses the SMS, which has been a real cash cow for a lot of the telcos for many, many years. So, and then Dr. Ron, what was the one you had, the app last week? You remember the app last night? It was a green thing.
Yes, it was WhatsApp Messenger.
Which is an equivalent to iMessage, and it also bypasses the telephone networks. And this is another thing that I think Optus were doing as well. They were getting
there's one I used to use with friends called Ping, which was basically the same thing. You just ping a friend and send a message.
Okay, so
I got your test message, by the way.
I found the phone which had it on. It was an old iPhone 3GS, which was...
So you had installed it and had used it at some point.
Yeah, the kids have been playing with it and they'd resurrected it, so that's what had happened. But anyway, that's another story. Optus protects against, or they're trying to protect against this too, as the smartphone apps such as iMessage, BlackBerry Messenger, is sort of bypassing the traditional roles of SMS. So they're developing their own apps, which obviously may be still defeating of the purpose, but they'll probably pump their text through a data portal as opposed to others. So I'm not sure what they're going to do there. But obviously, it's hitting the bottom lines of the telcos. No longer do they get their 20 cents a text.
Yeah, 25 cents if you're on Telstra. Well, that's the value they attribute to a text message, which will come out of your cap if you're on a cap plan.
Yeah. And Telstra are going to supply the iPad 2 next week, or this week probably by now too.
That's good.
Are you going to get an iPad 2, Dr. Ron? Your iPad-free household? No.
iPad-free.
iPad-free?
Yep. Warlock's got one.
Yeah, I'm happy with mine. I've just got the Wi-Fi only version. I just tether it through my iPhone 4S and it goes really well because the 4S gets about twice the download speed as my ADSL connection. I get about 4 megs down on a good day for my ADSL, and if I'm near some good towers for the 4S, I can get 7.5 megs down.
Oh, I'd kill for that, Warlock. They're great speeds.
Which carrier are you with, Warlock, or shouldn't I ask?
Telstra Next Gen.
Yeah, thought so.
Had to be.
Yeah. Anyway, so you can grab an iPad on Telstra. But I must admit, I'm the same. I only got the Wi-Fi version of the iPad because everything's got wireless these days, whether it be home or whether, as Warlock said, you can tether to a mobile device. Got to be the way to go.
Well, when would you be out...
Save you $200.
...with a tablet and not have your mobile phone with you? The answer is you probably wouldn't.
Never.
No.
The tablet's too big to go anywhere without a mobile phone, really, isn't it?
So rather than pay the extra for another data plan and another SIM card, just tether through your mobile phone.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense.
All right. What else has been happening this week, Dr. Ron? Oh, games. Gaming.
Skyrim came out.
Skyrim? What's Skyrim?
Skyrim is a new game from Bethesda from the Elder Scrolls series. Their number 5 game has come out, and they've thrown in some dragons.
Andrew,
hang
on, Warlock. Andrew, can you play the theme, the theme for Warlock's computer segment?
Oh, you're going to do the computer segment this week, Warlock?
Apparently.
Okay, yeah, I could do that.
I might get in trouble from Lena.
No, she's not here. She'll never know.
She's not here, no.
She doesn't listen back either.
You're perfectly safe.
And she doesn't listen back, and we'll change the locks.
Chains of Warlocks.
Dear. Anyway, just going to say the illegal downloads for gaming has increased 20% in the last 5 years. So obviously people like downloading these things. But is that anything, I guess, you got to look at it, compare that to music, compare that to videos. I'd say they'd all be pretty much in the same boat, wouldn't you, with illegal downloads?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Tell us about Elder Scrolls, Warlock.
Elder Scrolls, Bethesda Software has been bringing out Elder Scrolls series for years. They've had Morrowind and the one before this was Oblivion, which was quite good. This one is new. It's very large in scope, probably the biggest RPG adventure game that's out at the moment. And they've done a lot of changes in that at the start of the game, you just pick which race you want to start off with your character, and away you go. You don't have to pick a particular skill set, which has been a pretty major start of a lot of games, which annoys people because once you pick that at the start, you start going through the game and you might play it for a few days and then realize that that's not the kind of thing that you wanted to do, and you have to delete that character or just start a new one and go through the whole thing from scratch. But this one builds as you go along, so if you start using a bow and arrow, say, the more you use your bow and arrow, your skills go up in that area and you may become an archer because of that. They've got dragons have returned to Skyrim, and you can actually fight giant fire-breathing dragons, and the characters themselves have actually got dragon powers that they can... they have a particular yell that they can yell out, and it has effects like throwing characters across the screen. And the whole game is not linear. You don't follow any particular storyline that you have to. There's one main quest for the whole game, but there's millions of so many different side quests to keep you going for many hours and weeks and months. Just so much there that people are constantly finding new things, and they don't get so bored as they do with a lot of things.
So they call it an open world. You can go off and do your own thing entirely, can't you?
That's right, yeah, and it doesn't impact on your game, but you can join into... You can decide to be a bad person going around killing other people, and that will change the kind of game it becomes for you. You can join different factions, and that will change you into that particular kind of character with those particular skill sets. So you sort of make, at the start of the game, all you do is just come up with the type of character you want and build it from there into whatever kind of game you like. And they reckon that no two people will have the same experience of the game because there's just so many different things that you, and paths that you can take through the game.
That sounds rather interesting. I'm not a gamer. You can probably tell. But, yeah, it sounds like no two people can go down the same path or it's all different for everyone. That's got to be a good thing. It means you'll never run out of interest in it, will you? I still like
that. That's right.
Yeah.
How much does it cost to play?
I think it's just a one-off purchase, and then it's a single-player game, so you're just playing against the machine. Of course, they'll have updates and patches and that sort of thing in the future, but... once you've purchased the game, if it's like Oblivion, which I also have, you can also have downloadables where you can get shiny new shields and stuff like that in Oblivion and new horses and things like that. So I expect they'll have something like that for downloadable content to make a bit extra money from it. But, of course, you're not locked in, so you don't have to do that to enjoy the game.
So it's not one of those ones where you have to subscribe to a server and log into that all the time. It's all
That's right. It's not World of Warcraft, and you're not going to be joining up with friends to take on the dragon. It's more of a single-player, third-person game.
What platforms, cool. Warlock?
I believe it's on PC and at least Xbox. I'm not sure which other platforms.
Okay, that's good. There you go. Something else to do over the Christmas holidays. You can download more games, but not, hopefully not through Steam. We might take a break when we come back.
Poor Steam.
Well, you know, what can you say? When we come back, we're going to have Adam Turner's View from the Couch. We're going to be chatting to Scott Lawrenson, who's the CEO of Fetch TV, and about new little apps and things like that that's going to wind our way towards us.
Apps for our television?
Yeah, all those sorts of things very shortly. Well, more so apps for our small screen devices and PDAs and iPads and, you know, all those things that need an app these days, because we all need apps, don't we? They're everywhere.
Skyrim is Windows, PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360.
There you go.
Fantastic.
All right, back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So how do I do this calculation?
They called me on my mobile to ask me where the data was bad.
Or am I the last geek standing?
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Probably a little bit harsh.
I'm remembering conversations I didn't have.
Can I just say,
that would be a benchmark.
It would.
Maybe there is truth to that.
No. Maybe.
Those same clueless people have now got iPhones.
Oh, dear.
Ouch. Now, hang on.
Because it's
entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio. It's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, you are. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is in.
Hello.
Graham Callaghan is in.
Hello.
Lena is out. And Warlock is in this evening.
He's
over there. Warlock's joining us from Sydney, the very hot Sydney, which is obviously
sweltering.
Yeah, you'll have to get all the fans out again, Warlock, and do what you do in summertime. It is that time of the year, though. So
yeah, not far along before I'll be sleeping in the lounge room with the AC on, I can tell.
Yeah. I think we've only got three shows to go for the year. I'm quite looking forward to having a Christmas break this year. Sort of our last show is our first Monday in December. So then we're back into our Christmas rhetorical thing that we do. Play all
back
the best.
Again, back again about February or something?
Yeah, yeah, back again about February. We'll come back for more because you asked for it. Well, those out there asked for it. So
we can't get enough.
Oh, that's right.
Round about Monday the 5th of December. Does that sound right?
Yes, that's right.
So that's only 3 weeks away.
I know.
Crikey.
It only feels like we just came back.
I know.
Yeah.
And then when we come back, it only feel like we just left.
That's right. And you get the odd heat wave in the middle. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about TV again, as we do. Well, obviously, Graham's an advocate for cutting the cable, and I must admit, I quite enjoy getting my content off the internet thingy for no other reason than the quality is just so much better, and I can watch it when I want to watch it.
Yep.
And that's the thing I like. We've got to change the mindset. A lot of Australians, a lot of people anywhere in the world who watch television are probably set in their ways of thinking, oh, the news is on 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock on a weeknight or a weekend, and I've got to tune in for it there and then. But nowadays, we can get all of our content on demand, pretty much. And for those of us who, as we were discussing earlier on in the program, who have the ways and the means, you can actually pretty well watch anything, anytime, from anywhere. So where does this leave pay-per-view type sort of things? We're seeing the video market. I think Adam talked about it 2 weeks ago, which was with QuickFlix doing a, don't quote me on this thing, it was about a $14 or $15 all-you-can-eat rental download for videos and things like that. And we're seeing other players in the marketplace now like Fetch TV, which is through Optus, through iNet and a couple of other carriers that are now becoming on-demand type sort of things. We're seeing Google do their YouTube channels and things like that. And a lot of people are making a lot of money out of the YouTube channels too. I've been doing a bit of research on that, or more the point, Brian in the office has been doing a bit of research on that. And a lot of people are becoming quite wealthy just because they have no production skills, but they're making content that people want to watch. And I think that's quite important these days.
The whole market is going to shift. What's about to happen to television is similar to what did happen to radio after television was introduced. The television is going to become the medium for live events, sports, news, those sorts of things. Rolling entertainment things, like music video type stuff. And the actual scheduled programs, the serials, the weekly dramas, the comedies, all those sorts of things, will move to on-demand services. And the NBN is going to be the platform over which they're delivered.
Indeed, indeed. And, of course, the other thing, too, is radio, as you mentioned there earlier, Graham. You can now listen to anything. You can wake up to afternoon radio in the United States or evening radio in the UK, here in Australia, anytime you like.
With your internet streaming radio beside the bed.
A lot of people are listening to us right now doing just that.
Mm.
So, anyway, so Adam Turner caught up with the CEO of Fetch TV this week, Scott Lawrenson, and had a bit of a chin wag about some of the new apps and things like that that were about to hit the market. Here he is.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
So this week we've taken the view from the couch on the... Actually, we haven't taken it on the road because I'm still at home. This week we've taken the view from the couch to my kitchen table, and I'm speaking on the phone to Scott Lawson, who is CEO of Fetch TV, which is one of the big challenges to the likes of Telstra's T-Box when it comes to delivering video online. Scott, welcome to Tech Talk Radio.
Thanks, Adam.
Now, you've got some announcements coming up in the next few weeks. You're launching some smartphone and tablet apps to go with the Fetch TV service. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you offer with Fetch TV and then what these apps will allow people to do.
Okay, well, first of all, in terms of the core service, as you mentioned, Adam, it is the provision of a pay TV service to your TV via set-top box. So what we offer consumers through our ISP partners is what we think is the best personal video recorder in the market. So they're getting a huge 1 terabyte hard drive, the ability to pause, rewind, record live TV. They're getting the box includes 3 terrestrial tuners, so they can watch one show and record 2 others, so the ability to avoid those conflicts in the home. We've put what we believe is really all the key video store in the home assets available for rent. So we have a deal with nearly every major studio and distributor. So if you want to watch Bridesmaids on the weekend or any of the new release films from any of the studios, you'll have those available. We'll be adding the catch-up TV services very shortly. And then we offer a range of your traditional subscription TV services. We even offer 30 free movies as part of the basic subscription. So it's a very holistic service at a very attractive price point. Now, jumping to your question, which is about the applications, we found that people are interested in what we call the 3-screen experience, which is if you say your phone is your 1-foot experience, your tablet's your 2-foot, and that TV on the wall is the 10-foot, there are times when people want those devices to interact. So we're launching iPhone, iPad, and Android applications this month, and those will allow people to interact with their set-top box and their programming. A couple examples, if you're out and about and you forgot to record something and you want to see what's on tonight and set that recording at where you are in the world, you can do that. Now, if you're at home, a lot of people want to use the iPad to actually browse the content to, as a remote control, the iPhone to increase the volume, change the channel, see what else is on. But also for some things like keyboards. So if you're using something like YouTube on your TV and you want to do a search, the remote control is not the best keyboard. So enabling a keyboard functionality on your iPad or iPhone is a great way to type those things in. So we think this is really groundbreaking stuff, and we're really excited to launch it. It'll be in the market this month.
Further down the track, are we going to be able to watch content on those devices as well?
For launch, we've enabled all the trailers. So if you're looking through, we have over 500, and that'll grow to 1,000 movies. You can watch all those now on your iPhone or iPad. You can purchase them, but you're purchasing them for viewing on the TV. Sometime in the first half of next year, we'll actually take the next step, which is to make the content available. opposed to a technical issue.
And so that's coming straight from the internet to the device. Will we maybe be able to watch content from a Fetch TV box across our home network on the device as well? We'll say a TV show that we've recorded?
Yeah, absolutely. So enabling the home so that you can have a multi-screen experience is something very high on the priority list. And you do have a situation where people are watching a movie in the living room, getting a bit tired and want to watch the last half an hour in bed on the iPad, etc. And those are the types of things that we certainly would plan to enable.
And I'd be able to watch something on the TV while my kids are in the next room with the iPad watching something that we've recorded earlier?
Yep. So that sort of hub-and-spoke approach, again, is on the roadmap. And I think that our current customers are finding that we're moving very quickly.
Now, you were saying to me, we were chatting earlier, you were saying that you do all of your software development in Australia yourself rather than relying on third parties from overseas. What kind of difference does that make as to what you can offer?
It's one of the big traps for most companies is they form a relationship with one of the major software houses and they move on to proprietary software middleware levels. And then they're beholden to the international roadmaps for those companies. And some of the things that are interesting to Australian audiences, maybe an iView, et cetera, just aren't visible to a company based in France or the US or the UK, et cetera. So doing it all here allows us to be far more nimble. So we literally have over 100 staff at Fetch TV working on enhancing the service, and we're able to define our own product roadmap, do the programming, do the testing, et cetera, all in country. And what that allows us to do is just to have a far more nimble and, you know, rapid product development path. And that's something that was very hard to do. We've been going for about 3.5 years to build the platform that gives us that flexibility. But once you get there, it's a beautiful thing, and you can really outpace your competitors in terms of enhancing the service.
Now, you were telling me that you're one of the first devices to implement YouTube Leanback. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So YouTube has recognized that it's a wonderful service, but a lot of people are quite interested in seeing YouTube on their TV. The challenge with viewing it on your TV is the remote control is not a mouse or a keyboard, so you need a slightly different navigation capability, ability to use up, down, left, right, and enter to move around the content. But also the types of content people want to view on a TV, you know, obviously a strong preference for HD and SD content. So YouTube has developed a new service, which I believe they now call YouTube HD, but it requires a very advanced processor chipset, and it runs in Flash. So the box needs to be a very high spec to be able to support this YouTube HD. And fortunately for us, we have a very similar development roadmap in terms of open source and our middleware layer. And we have a very high-end set-top box. So we're one of the first able to run it. And consumers can sit in the living room and watch YouTube in all its glory on the TV, running HD and SD content, which is what it's all about.
Thank you very much for your time.
No worries, Adam. It's always a pleasure.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It's exciting times, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't sound so sure. Not so sold on it?
No, I'm not that sold. I'm glad that he realises that the remote control is not the ideal keyboard and mouse for searching.
that's why you get a boxy. The boxy's got the little QWERTY thing on the back, and you can actually plug other keyboards. You know the wireless ones you get from the local computer shop that cost you about $20?
Yep.
You can whack those little dongly things that come, the little Bluetooth dongles that you get.
I do.
You can stick that into one of the USB ports, and like you do at home with your media center, Dr. Ron, you can use a keyboard, a real one. It's got to be good.
What about
the interesting thing about the Boxy is there's info last week about them getting a USB tuner going to be available soon so that you can watch free-to-air on it as well.
Really? That wouldn't appeal to some, but it may appeal to others, I guess. A USB tuner. Yeah, well, they've been around for a while. It makes sense, I guess, doesn't it? So.
Then you don't need to worry about your PVR and TV and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well,
digital channels.
Isn't the PVR going to be dead in the water? Well, no, that's a very gross generalisation in a lot of respects. But the PVR is really designed for catching material as it goes to air. But nowadays, everything's
PVR
on demand.
The PVR bridges the gap until we get the proper subscribe to a library of programs type service. Then the PVR bridges the gaps. We record them as they go to air, and we watch them when we want. So it sort of.
It allows
us to use the old system the way we want to use it in the future.
I bought a PVR. I've recorded one thing on it, and I've had it for about 12 months.
I've got a TiVo, which has been doing me okay, but you might have seen Adam's article this week about the new TiVo XL released in Australia. They changed The in the US,
I saw his tweet. He was very scathing.
Yeah, in the US they've had two more series versions of the TiVo come out, the TiVo Premiere, and I think there's Elite or something, and it's got much more features. You can view YouTube and do a lot more with it. In Australia, we're stuck with one from about 3 or 4 years ago, which has had a 320 gig hard drive. Although you could buy an extender hard drive for it, 1 terabyte. And Officeworks have had it on special a couple of times for $99. But the new TiVo coming out is exactly the same box. They took out the 320 and put in a 1 terabyte and said, there you go, brand new model. And it's a lot of people are very upset about it.
It's still the old model.
They knocked it back up to about $700 when you could just buy the standard one and have exactly the same features for about $499 plus $99 for the extender, and you get 1.3 terabytes. So Australia's been left out and a lot of people upset, but I expect it's because in the US people have to buy a subscription and have ongoing payments so they can afford to bring out better and newer models that have got faster and more features, whereas over here you buy it once and you never pay TiVo another cent. So,
but TiVo here is driven by the Seven Network, isn't it? They own some of that.
Yeah, and Hybrid TV in conjunction with Channel 7, and they supply the TV guide and everything for it, but people find it difficult to get support in the forums and from the phone lines, emails, and that sort of thing. So they're not very terribly happy about it.
Mm. Oh, Graham?
Yeah, for people who are using subscription television, the Foxtel IQ2 PVR works really, really well and does a great job.
Have you got one?
Yeah, got one at home. I don't primarily use it. It's in the lounge room where it's sort of used by other people. But, yeah, it works very, very well. It's very reliable, does good quality recordings. It never skips or, does any of those bad behaviour things that some PVR, the cheap PVRs will do. So that's a great solution if you're a Foxtel subscriber.
Mm.
But, the PVR I've got is the add-on one for the PlayStation 3, which is called Play TV.
Yep.
And, yeah.
Next to useless?
Yeah, pretty much. It doesn't like it if you're heavily using your PlayStation 3 for something else while it's recording. You have to leave it running all the time.
I think we spoke about that a couple of weeks back, didn't we?
It's got to, it doesn't seem to particularly like the fact that the antenna down that end of the house isn't all that good. So, yeah, as a result, just doesn't ever get used. In fact, it's not plugged in at the moment, so...
Phil in our chat room says he's waiting for Hulu Plus support for the Boxy. Andrew, you've got a D-Link Boxy box.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Hulu support for the Boxy as well.
You're up there with Phil, are you?
Look, there's Hulu Plus and there's Hulu. Plus is obviously the subscription-supported method of watching Hulu, and then you've got the free version, which is just the standard Hulu, which is ad-supported. You know, the one thing I do like about Hulu's ad-supported content is the fact that it actually drops the audio level of the ads down compared to the program content. You know how everyone in this country complains that they turn the ads up when the television on free-to-air broadcast is here?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, well, they do. Exactly right. Yeah.
it's one thing to complain about it, but yeah, they do.
Yeah. Well, have a listen to the volume of the ads in on Hulu in their supported area, and it's about half the level of what you watch your content on. I think that's really good.
That is good.
So, good. But yeah, Hulu on the Boxy is not too flash at the moment. If you go there on your Boxy through the web browser in the Boxy, you'll find that you can't watch it. It puts a little black text on or white text on the screen that says, "Oh, you're watching from a Boxy. Wait for our app." It's been like that for some time now, and there are people out there that have got a great little bit of script that you just load up, and that fixes that problem so you can actually watch Hulu. And by far, Hulu would have one of the biggest libraries, on-demand libraries, I think I've ever seen on anyone online.
Do you think if Hulu and other on-demand services became available in Australia that it would have an impact on Foxtel, who
absolutely.
A lot of people have had for a long time and would like to have a la carte channels or shows, but you have to buy a package with, like 20 channels that half of them you don't want to watch, and then when you want the really good ones with the movies, you have to buy another 10 channels that you don't want to watch just to get one movie channel, that sort of thing.
I think Foxtel
do a major change.
I think Foxtel will always have its place for people who want additional sports channels in particular. A lot of pay TV subscribers
Foxtel
are subscribing to sports channels.
Yeah, it's a hybrid between free-to-air and on-demand, I think, is going to be the way to look at it. Hence the reason for the PVR that comes with
IQ2. Well, people who are looking at it the way you're looking at it will move to something else. But what I'm saying is that people who are looking at it for live events, for sports, for the cricket that's not on the live to air, or to watch AFL football, or to watch what's that Thugby game they play up north?
That one.
That game, they will. Yeah, they will continue to subscribe to something like Foxtel to get the additional sports channels and those sorts of things.
And that's its niche.
Yeah.
That's its niche. Then you've got to look at the anti-siphoning regulations that you've got with free-to-air television and pay TV, because all the good stuff apparently still has to be on free-to-air.
Yeah, and we saw with Channel 10's behaviour with the AFL Grand Final how poorly that works.
Shenanigans is a word that comes to mind. Hey, during the course of the week, there was a bit of a DNS scam in the United States, and seven people have been hauled across the coals. The US Department of Justice was told that it uncovered a large, sophisticated internet scam that netted $14 million by infecting millions of computers with malware designed to redirect their website searches to a generated ad site.
They changed the DNS settings in victims' computers.
Yeah. Now, the DNS is like the phone book lookup, although we don't have phone books for computers. We're too busy doing other things with them, like holding up monitors. But the equivalent of the phone book gets sort of like, if you go to
one... gets hijacked.
Yeah. Instead of going to abc.com, it goes to a different site, which looks and smells and purports all to be like that. Well, maybe it doesn't. But then they get their revenue from their impressions, their ad impressions and things like that, and they earn a bit of a killing from them. So, typical way of hijacking things. Graham, how often is DNS or is the DNS system secure these days?
Well, this didn't attack the DNS system. This attacked the DNS settings on the individual's computers.
Yeah, so they would have got something in an email or been on a site or something to do this?
Somehow got some software installed on their machine, which redirected their DNS queries to the bad guy's DNS server. So that didn't directly attack the DNS system. It attacked the settings on that user's computer. The DNS system is a little bit more secure than it used to be, but there's still a few ways to... trick it in particular ways into giving false results, and that's even better for the bad guys, because what in that situation, if they trick a major ISP's DNS servers into giving the wrong answer, then they don't have to infect the end user's computers. The end users are relying on that DNS server.
Yeah, the ISPs.
Yeah. But that's getting less and less common as the DNS system gets locked down a bit better than it used to be.
Yep. Six people have been arrested in Estonia and Russia. So, yes, there's plenty of it out there, I guess, at the moment too. And that comes down to the good old-fashioned saying is just make sure you run all your appropriate updates and stay good, people. Don't go to those sites which you shouldn't go to. And if you've got nasty things coming in by email, well, maybe look at running some better anti-scammy, anti-Trojan-y sort of software on your machine.
Yep. And have a little bit of awareness of what's running on your machine as well. I had a customer come to me last week with a laptop, and he said, now this thing that's popped up and said I've been infected by 427 different viruses and I've got to pay them $80 to remove them all. So I paid them the $80.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Oh, no.
But it didn't remove all the software. Can you help me? Now,
wow.
Yeah. And the guy sort of, he knew that he hadn't bought this software that was installed on his machine that was coming up with these warnings. But even so, he didn't put two and two together and say that the warnings were fake. So please be aware, if the warnings are coming from something you don't recognise, then, you know, be aware that, you know, it's probably a scam. But the other thing is, make sure you do have decent antivirus and anti-spyware and so on software on your computer, whether it be something like Norton antivirus or Kaspersky antivirus or something like that, and then trust the warnings that you get from it and not ones that come from something else.
You really get what you pay for with those sorts of products. Don't be afraid to splash out a little bit. Invest in your security.
Well, the thing is, you don't have to splash out that much. You don't need the big fancy suites with everything rolled in, the big internet security suites that all of these companies sell. Norton antivirus or Kaspersky antivirus, which is their lowest product, is actually good. That's the one that actually protects you. All the other stuff that they try to upsell you to is extra bloatware that you don't need.
But don't
the
use
the best one that I like that I don't know why more people don't use it is the Microsoft Security Essentials. It's free, it does the job, and it did a lot of better job for me than anything else.
That's interesting. People are starting to talk up Microsoft Security Essentials. I still don't trust it because I just don't have never trusted like Microsoft to do that job. I've always had the mindset of someone else has to do that job for Microsoft.
Well, at least they didn't originally create it. They bought Giant Technology software and then it. So you could
that's
take
true,
that.
That's true. I'm still a Kaspersky fan, I have to say. Andrew's converted me to Kaspersky, and I still think they do a great job.
I've moved on from Kaspersky. I'm actually with you, Warlock, on that one. I think the Essentials package that Microsoft has is very good. I've never had any cause to... I gave it a go on a machine which I didn't really need to, you know, it wasn't such a valuable machine. And then I thought, no, it's been working fine for a couple of months and it did all of its updates.
Hardly takes up any resources, CPU, correct, memory, anything.
And it's a free service. And if you've got nothing on your machine, you might as well get this, especially if you're running legit software, which is Windows software, that is, which is really good. Works for me.
One that bugs me is McAfee. We've got it on all the work computers. And every time I open a directory to create a new file, it sits there and locks the computer for about 2 minutes while it scans the files there to make sure there's nothing nasty. And I can't even alt-tab to something else. I'm just stuck there waiting for McAfee to finish scanning it.
Yep, some of the older players in that industry are starting to feel very heavy and clunky. And yeah, McAfee would be one of them. I don't like Norton's for similar reasons.
And don't use free AVG either, because you get what you pay for. And if you don't pay anything for it...
Get what you pay for, we've just been hearing about how good Microsoft Security Essentials is, which you don't pay for.
Well, you sort of do through the operating system.
Yeah. You're paying for it with the operating system, yeah, you reckon.
Absolutely.
But AVG is completely free, and it just causes problems. Yeah. And you can do better.
That's true.
Dr. Ron, a question for you, just because you seem to be more in the know about these sort of things than most people. During the course of the week, you sent an antisocial email to most of the panel members on Tech Talk Radio about Google Plus.
Yes, I did. You antisocial folk.
Correct. Saying that we all had to do things and befriend you and stuff. What's all that about? This is all to do with the corporate pages or something on Google Plus now?
Yeah, the profile pages. Up until now, Google has said if you're going to be beta testing Plus, which is their new social networking service, then they just want people to sign up as people, as with their real names, and not to sign up and try and create like a club page or a company page, for example.
Mm-hmm.
What they've done now is they've let people start to register those sorts of pages.
So how do you do this? You have to go in as your own corporate Gmail account to do this?
No, it's associated with your own account.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you had, you being Andrew McCollum, if you wanted to set up one for your company where you work, you can do that through your account, and you can have that as a separate profile.
Yep.
And so they're endorsing this now, and they're making it easy for people to do.
And can you only do one? Can Andrew set up one for his work, and can you set up another one for Tech Talk Radio, and another one for...
I've only set up the one, but I don't think there's any limit. I think you can set up as many as you want to.
Now, what's the benefit of this? Is it just the normal Google Plus options that you get? I noticed that if I send something to Google Plus, it gets regurgitated and comes back to me sort of moments later.
Right.
It's like an echo.
Why is that?
Well, you post something on Plus and it gets retweeted, for want of a better term.
Oh, does it?
Haven't you noticed that?
When you comment on it, it bubbles up to the top again.
Yes, exactly right, Warlock.
That's because it's current in your stream.
Ah.
Yeah. If people are commenting on it, yeah, as Warlock says, it'll keep bubbling up to the top. But the benefit is that it means that your organisation has a presence on Plus. That's what it means.
Do you reckon it'll take off?
I think it will. Yeah, definitely will, because it's something that people have been asking for since day one. It's something that Google has been saying for a long time. Hold off. Don't register a new Google account on behalf of, you know, XYZ widgets. Just wait and we'll get there.
Yeah.
And they've got there.
They just wanted to do it the right way.
Exactly. That's right. Well, they wanted to do it the right way. And bear in mind, everybody, the service is still in beta for everything. So
yeah, but Gmail was in beta for 10 years. So will this.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah. But they're still ironing out some bugs, and they're still fine-tuning it, and they're still introducing features like this.
As Graham says, what do you expect for free? I think it's a damn fine service.
I still haven't played with it a great deal, although I'm very pleased that I now can. I've only got one person connected to my Google Plus stream at the moment, although I think a few others have tried to befriend me there.
I'm more on Google Plus than Facebook or anything else now, except for Twitter, which I just watch all the time, but it's more of something that I watch and occasionally interact with, but I do quite a lot of Google Plusing.
I was never ever a fan of Facebook, so
I've severed ties with Facebook too. It was quite an easy thing to do, And I think Dr. Ron, who is... Are you still active on Facebook?
I'm about to close my Dr. Ron Facebook account, I think, because all it does at the moment is it serves as a... like a redirector from my Twitter feed. So if I tweet something, it automatically gets posted to Facebook. But that's all. I don't log on and check it all that often, really. It's just, it doesn't need to be there anymore. I've moved on.
I've noticed also that Google have a lot of things that didn't work for Google Apps users, not just Google Plus, but several other things as well that didn't work for Google Apps users are now working a lot better. And this has had an interesting side effect. I think I'm going to have to factory my HTC Desire, my Android phone, and reinstall everything on it with everything connected to my real Google Apps email address instead of the fake one I had to set up because you couldn't use a Google Apps address to
connect to everything. So you didn't heed the warnings that Dr. Ron was just saying, hang on a sec, everyone, just be patient and all that.
At the time, the only way you could use things like that was to have a Gmail address that wasn't a Google Apps account.
Yep. Yep.
And that applied to Plus. It also applied to various things on, you know, with Android syncing and all that sort of stuff. Now that all that stuff's working with my Google Apps address, which is my real actual address that I use every day, I want to ditch the other one, but I can't. My phone says I can't disconnect it because vital services are connected through that address.
I like your address book and your mail backups and syncings and things like that.
Who knows? Yeah, something is, but... And
time for first birthday then.
Yeah, that's right. What I'm going to have to do is make a note of all the apps I've got installed and
I've got an app for you that does this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have. I'll talk to you about it after the show, actually.
No, tell me about it.
Tell you about it. Sorry, I'll just turn my phone on here and don't anyone ring me for the phone. Well, it's called My Backup and it's got an icon which looks like a, you know those things you throw off a shift, a boy, I think they call them, a B-O-U-Y, not a B-O-Y.
Yeah.
Those ringy things. You've been on a ship lately. You should know what they look like. It's called My Backup Pro,
okay,
and it's basically a simple thing where you can actually archive off-site or to your SD card or your applications and or your settings and things like that. So you can pick and choose which settings you want and then
bring them back.
You can blow it away and then bring them back or bring back the ones you selectively want to bring back.
Mm.
My only concern, my only caveat on that is that if you've bought, say, an app in under one Google account setting and you move it to another, I don't know whether it's going to work or not.
Yeah, well, that's what I've got to deal with, although I haven't paid for very many apps, so most of them are free, so I should just be able to get them under the new account. But that's the issue, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not concerned about losing my calendar or my address book or anything like that because it's all in the Google Apps account anyway. It's just a copy of what's online.
Mm.
Just having a look at Google Plus while you're talking, Andrew, yes, you can have more than one extra page. You can go into Manage, it says Manage My Pages. You can click on that link there, and I've already got one page set up there, and I've got a big red create button as well if I want to create another page.
Ah.
It must be very hot in the country at the moment because I'm just watching on the chat. Everyone's complaining about how hot it is in certain parts of Australia as we speak. So, yes, should be good. I must have a bit more of a look at the pages on Google+. There's companies such as Dell, Oracle, SAP, Telstra, EMC, IBM, and other big companies jumping on there. What relevance do you think they would have in being Google+? Is it a great portal for spruiking their wares or for keeping in touch with their customers?
Well, it's a social networking presence. So if you have a look at what Telstra, for example, has done on Twitter, making the organization accessible through that social media platform, then they have to get on board with Google+. There's no question about that.
The National Australia Bank claimed to be the first Australian bank to launch on Google+.
Oh, you're good on your NAB. No worries.
One-upping whatever. Everybody?
Yeah. Yeah. What, you beat the Commonwealth Bank by 2 minutes? That's good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, no at least Commonwealth Bank's got... Hey, Kaching is the app. Warlock, you're a bit of a... Are you a Commonwealth Bank customer?
No, unfortunately, I'm a member of one of their subsidiaries, Bank West. But okay. Kaching does sound very interesting.
I just thought
being able to swipe your phone across instead of one of your credit cards.
Yeah, being a person who likes tinkering and developing apps for that sort of gadget, I figured you might be across it. But you'll have to wait till another bank gets hold of it. But yeah, it's one of those apps. I think we spoke to David from the Commonwealth Bank last two shows ago. Very interesting what they're doing up there. Banking. In the wallet is going to go to the phone now, so you can leave your cards at home.
And just to answer your question from before as well about being antisocial, the issue that we had during the week was we set up a Tech Talk Radio page on Google+, and I was trying to add all you guys to my circles, to the Tech Talk Radio circles, but you had your privacy settings set such that I couldn't add you until you'd allowed me, or until you'd added me. So I thought that was a bit antisocial, hence the email.
Oh. Sorry about that, Dr. Ron. You know what it's like.
It's okay.
You know what it's like.
I understand.
Google Plus Page is going to be, I don't know, probably pretty good.
No, they'll be good. They'll be very good. And we're going to see more little changes like this as well over the next few weeks with a bit of luck.
Yeah. Oh, well, be good. The voice behind the British Siri goes public. You know how everyone... Well, you've been involved in the telecommunications industry for some point in time there, Dr. Ron.
A few months now. Yep.
You know how people quite often get voiceover artists in to record voice prompts for telephone systems?
Yes.
Yeah, well, apparently that's what...
You record what's called a prompt set in the industry.
Yeah, well, apparently a guy in England, the guy who did the British Siri, has come out because Apple told him not to, so he did. And I think that's probably the only reason. But he's a technology journalist. His name's John Briggs, and he revealed himself as the voice of Siri in the United Kingdom. How many different flavours of Siri are there, not being an Apple user? Warlock, there's a question for you. Do you know how many flavours of Siri there are?
I think there's about half a dozen at this stage. It's US, Canada, the UK, Australia, New Zealand at least.
Yeah.
And they'll be, I think that's part of the reason why Siri is said to be in beta at the moment, because they've got a lot more to add. Of course, if you're in the US, you can say, where can I get a pizza? And Siri will tell you a list of the local places, and then you can phone them from there. But it doesn't work outside of the US at this stage.
Yeah, I think as we've discussed, it's a language-based and location-based sort of thing. So is there a male and female voice for each location? So if you're in Australia, you can choose a bloke or a Sheila?
Yeah, in Australia, you've got a female. In the UK, you've got male voice. In the US, it's different again, so...
Okay. So, yes, you're stuck with the predefined...
Location. You can't switch between them unless you change your location and language settings.
Okay. Is it all interlinked with iTunes as well? I'm sort of guessing it is, so...
Just go straight to the Siri servers.
Okay. So depending upon which location you're in, determines what sex of voice you get for Siri.
That's right, yeah. Some countries prefer a female voice talking to them. They've found out through studies, so they've gone with that.
Oh, I guess so. I guess so. We've got an Australian one here because Siri came in and took over Adam's view from the couch a while back.
That was a bit disturbing.
It was.
Interesting.
We've got the unedited version up on the webpage on Adam's View from a Couch page if you want to go and hear it. There were a few questions he asked it which didn't make it to the final mix.
Thank God for that.
So we didn't hear the full version on air.
No, we didn't. We didn't. So what do you think of Siri just briefly, Warlock? Are you happy with it? Does it work as you'd expect?
When it understands what you're saying, I haven't tried it with the new Australian upgrade, although I tried to get it to say, g'day Sheila, good on your cobber, and that sort of thing, which it sort of came up with a couple of interesting things. It has trouble understanding it when I say Siri. Half the time it thinks that I'm saying theory, T-H-E-O-R-Y.
So. Oh, really?
But a lot of fun things. You can ask it questions, and it's got fun comebacks to your questions and things like that. So you could say to it... what's the best smartphone device, Siri? And I'll say, there are other smartphones out there?
Yes, I could imagine. There's a lot of cynicism in the chat at the moment. Grant's just said, is Siri just an Apple joke? Yeah, okay, good. A lot of people are very skeptical of this. Anyway, we might take a break, and we'll come back with more of this program, which is Tech Talk Radio. In the studio this evening, there's myself, Andrew, we've got Ron and Graham, and all the way from Sydney, thanks to wonderful technology, we have Warlock. And you can come and join us in the chat at chat.techtalkradio.com.au for the last half hour of the show.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
I'm surprised they don't stand out the front healing lepers.
Trying to model these proteins takes a huge amount of computing power.
It looks like something Lady Gaga would wear.
I think a lot of people did give them shtick.
The boot up time is actually faster than the mobile phone 7 time.
Circuit switch networks, packet switch networks, two different things.
How do you kill it?
Put in the washing machine.
Then Graham replied,
yes.
Doesn't like the way it looks in jeans.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, and Warlock is joining us from Sydney, the very hot, sticky Sydney at the moment. So, welcome aboard, everybody. We've in the last little bits of the show this evening, we've got Oddspot Gadget Website of the Week coming up afterwards, which is always bit of a thrill, I guess, to say the least. Someone on the chat, we were just talking during the break about Siri and even on the radio beforehand. And the Restorer has come up and said Iris for Android is out, which is Siri backwards. See, I didn't pick that up, but you did, Dr. Ron. Now, you're saying it's not that flash?
No, and that's still a bit useless. We spoke about it a few weeks ago. I've had it on my phone for a little bit now. And it does what it purports to do. It's still very much, it's not even in beta. It's sort of an alpha test stage, development stage at the moment.
So what do you do with it? You just talk to it like you do Siri?
It's just voice recognition, and it's a voice recognition engine. You talk to it like you do Siri. It passes off everything that it interprets off to Wolfram Alpha. Wolfram Alpha, let me
speak
English.
Well, that's what Siri does, doesn't it?
Yeah, Siri's a bit cleverer than that.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, but this.
If Siri can't figure it out, it will pass it on to Wolfram Alpha.
Yeah, but Siri tries to figure it out itself first and answer intelligently.
Okay,
but Iris just sort of sends everything off to Wolfram Alpha and sends back the response pretty much.
So Siri can interact with your phone. It'll put stuff in your calendar for you or send an SMS for you. Will Iris do that?
No, it won't do any of that, Graham. No, it's almost like a voice front end to Wolfram Alpha at this stage.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully it becomes more like what Siri is for the Android.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's interesting. And then, of course, there's the other one, which is the one that you guys have had all sorts of grief with. Yeah, Vlingo.
Oh, Vlingo. Why don't you like Vlingo? Really sorry about that.
I don't want to have a 10-minute conversation with a machine just to dial a phone number.
And I don't want to have a voice-activated phone switching off software.
That's right. I don't like my phone crashing whenever I connect it to Bluetooth.
That is a fundamental issue, isn't it? Whenever you deconnect it, it reboots it and does strange things like that.
But it's the worst application of the week suggestion I've ever made. I'm profoundly embarrassed.
You won't
leave that one down.
No.
I will not. I will not let myself leave that one down.
I actually removed it from my phone, and it made my phone just behave even more in a bizarre way. So as a result, sorry, keeping you up, Graham, are we? Oh,
sorry. Thanks for pointing that out on air.
He's in there catching flies. So, but I actually took it off my handset, and it then made it behave even more bizarre. So I put it back on again, and it sort of tamed down. But I think I'm going to have to do what you're proposing to do, Graham, and give your phone a bit of a first birthday.
Yeah, format C:, your phone. Yeah.
Cool. It's the equivalent of a Apple user, you know, going to the next OS. I think it's just is that right? Would that be correct in saying that Warlock, that, you know, when you go from OS 4 or something up to OS 5, it's a fresh install.
Mostly, yeah, but because you do a backup first through iTunes, then you're right. But from now on, because iOS 5 has got over the air, same as Android's had for a while, you get incremental updates automatic.
Yes. And what about the battery life for you? Were you around when we were talking about battery, or did you join us after that?
I had a bit of problem with mine as well, but I had some problems with also losing signal with Telstra. I'd turn the phone on, I'd go to use Twitter and say, sorry, I can't find any connection. I'd have a look and it'd have zero bars or SOS only, and then it suddenly five bars would appear out of nowhere. I actually tweeted Telstra. I do find that they're... Twitter account is very useful and very quick at getting back to you, and they said there's known outages at the moment in the CBD due to congestion, so it could be something like that, and I'm hoping it is rather than the phone or the SIM.
Very good. Well, I guess. All right, just a few other interesting news bits before we head off to the Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week. Google's backing out of the Gmail BlackBerry app. Obviously, no Gmail for BlackBerry users. Is this another nail in the BlackBerry coffin we could be speaking of?
Is that thing not dead yet?
Yeah, well, BlackBerry's very big in the United States, more so than here.
Yeah.
Here, we're very much Android and Apple iPhone type culture, but over there, they like their BlackBerries.
I discovered that, yeah.
Did you? How did you discover it?
Oh, a friend from America with a BlackBerry that we couldn't figure out how to charge.
Oh, yes.
It's and very fussy about how it needs to actually see the computer. It needs to have a USB connection, not just power on the USB port.
Oh, like an iPhone.
iPhones aren't that bad.
They're bad.
No, you just get this error message comes up, says this device is not designed to be used with this phone.
This computer.
But it still charges.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, with the BlackBerry, it wouldn't charge if you just plugged it into a USB port that had power. You had to have a USB connection. It had to install the drivers and make
a connection
with the phone.
So what happened? Once the battery went flat, that was it?
Yeah, and we couldn't figure out why it wasn't charging, even though we were plugging it into USB power sources. It had a standard USB connector on it. So
okay.
Yeah.
It does depend with the AI devices. A lot of them will only work with certain USB hubs that have a particular pin taken down with a resistor or in a computer that's actually turned on. If I plug my iPhone or iPod Shuffle or any of the devices into my USB hub, even though it's on and there's power coming out of it, it won't charge it at all. It has to actually the computer be turned on. But you can buy specific ones that will work with it. I have I do a lot of BlackBerry support at work. I'm known as the guy who rebuilds the firmware every time they completely die. It happens.
It's your fault. You're perpetuating the BlackBerry for no legitimate reason. You should just let the things die.
I should.
Well,
they won't die. They keep coming.
As you keep fixing them.
Now, if they want Gmail, you can say, nah, just get a real phone, anything other than a BlackBerry, and you should be right. So watch out, RIM. In other news, AFACT and iiNet, their final submissions before they head off to the High Court of Australia for their latest hearing.
The latest appeal. Doesn't get higher than this.
This is the appeal that you have when you're not having an appeal, I think, isn't it? They're just after a bit of extra cash. When I say that, that's probably a harsh thing to say, but I think they're looking to recoup some of their costs. That's AFACT, the People Against Copyright.
No, they're looking for a decision. They're appealing.
I thought
They're appealing the appeal.
That was made. Is that what you do?
Yeah, that's consistently been made against AFACT.
Okay, because what they're talking about now is the fact that AFACT want iiNet to go and police the copyright issues and, you know, send people letters saying don't download things like this because it's naughty. And iiNet have said, well, that's going to cost lots of money to do that and all that sort of stuff. And AFACT are saying, no, it's not. So this is another thing that they're going to talk about in the appeal. They just, you know,
personally, I don't find AFACT appealing at all.
No, very well. Someone had to say that, and you've done it now. Well, that's good. Also, Google has made a thing that Aussie stores or Australian stores are missing out on mobile business because of the fact that everyone's now heading over to using mobile devices for locating businesses. Google's found that 25% of Australian retail inquiries are now coming from mobile devices. That's obviously excluding BlackBerries. But the problem, however, lies with the businesses. Google estimates with 80% of them not having a mobile-friendly website. How important is a mobile-friendly website these days, Dr. Ron?
Very important. Very, very important. I'm surprised that mobile web traffic is still so low in terms of worldwide web traffic. It's like down, was it 6% or 11%, or it's down there somewhere.
Yeah.
I would have thought it would be a lot more than that. It's certainly growing. It's on the increase.
So what would a business have as a mobile site? Obviously, that's a fairly ambiguous question, but if you take, for example, a Telstra site or a telco site, let's be a little bit more general, would that take you to billing and accounts? Would that take you to phone numbers for contacts or all of the above in a very easy, big-buttoned way to do it?
Well, you just have to ask yourself the question, what is it that a customer would want to do from the mobile device while they're on the go?
I guess it's a valid question. I don't know what they want to do.
They're not going to want to read.
Well, and that's the point. You've got to think that stuff through, and you've got to think about what's actually going to happen. There's two big mistakes that people make. One is that they force all mobile devices to use a very limited website that only has very specific functions, which is what you were just talking about, maybe redirecting them to billing or something like that.
Yep.
With big buttons. And that's fine, except that someone comes along with an iPad with a nice big screen and they still get redirected to that big clunky site that only has such very limited functionality. If they do that, they've got to have a button on it that says, take me to the real website.
Mm.
The other thing is that, and the really correct approach would be that the mobile site should have all exactly the same content as the main website, but with a different CSS style sheet attached to make it viewable and work on the different size and shape screen. It should be the same content, different style. That should be
the
only difference.
That's the interesting thing about using a CMS like WordPress. You can get plugins that automatically give you a new theme that works fantastic on your device. Like for the iPad, it'll swipe across and use those kind of gestures. For the iPhone, it gives you a smaller... Yeah. Smaller views of it that you can click on for more information.
And, that's the one thing that web designers everywhere have always got so completely and utterly wrong is the separation of content from style. They must separate content from style so that we can use different devices you know, and
get the best experience.
And get the best experience. That's exactly right. And Andrew's just grimaced because he's one of those web designers that thinks that he should have control over everything about the way a website looks, and that's not the way it
Graham,
should work.
You are so wrong. Graham, have you heard of clients? It's the clients that think they need to know what's both on the difference between the main portal and the mobile portal, and nothing shall come between what a client thinks and what a client wants. And unfortunately, it's not the web designers, it's the clients. And the other thing too is traditionally you're building two websites, a website for a mobile device and a website
well,
for
that's
a
just
large,
ridiculous.
Large screen. And that's where it comes down to the bottom line. It's the clients that dictate that.
Yeah, and if the client said they wanted a website that was full of flash and blinking red, you know, flashing text.
Then
you,
then you do it. Then you do it, and it's not a state government site. Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week coming up after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
You should have seen the odd spot that Andrew sent me. That's with tone raised.
Sorry, Adelaide. Sorry, Brisbane.
Sorry, Canberra.
Sorry, Darwin.
Oh, it'll get there in the end.
A question for Lena, gamer and mum.
Hey, that's me.
It's no good writing an agreement that's only enforceable in 1850.
Java, my friend. Java. Yep.
Could be Java. Yeah.
Have you got a spare Google Plus invite? Yeah, it's in the mail.
Yay, my first
I think
nerd
that's
alert.
The first nerd alert.
It is.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Thank you to regular contributor GJMCN for this week's gadget suggestion.
He is regular.
He is a regular. The New Force, NU Force, UDAC 2.
What?
UDAC2. It's a high performance USB digital audio converter, DAC, a DAC.
A DAC.
That connects your personal computer's audio to your home stereo or your desktop sound system or your headphones. You know how when you get a little netbook or a laptop and you plug your headphones in and you listen to music and you're bitterly disappointed because you hear all that noise and high pitched stuff coming through the audio channel? It's not as clean as you want it to be.
Yes.
Well, this is what you need. You need a little device like the UDAC 2. GJ says, I've been looking at better sound for my computer and reading sites like Computer Audiophile, and as you guys are sound and vision guys and girls, perhaps you might like to have a look at this product.
Sounds good.
And other products by New Force. See what you think. GJ says he likes what it does for the audio quality, and it's, he reckons it's the cheapest DAC, and would he'd like to try their amplifiers, but he can't. He's got WAF issues.
Ah.
But that's all right. You can buy them online from Audio Trends for about $170, but have a shop around. That's our gadget, Andrew, the New Force UDAC 2.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
After Adam's view from the couch last week, this had to be a website, logmein.com.
It's excellent.
Andrew and I have both played with this during the week, and it's really, really good.
Graham, have you played with it?
No.
You need to. It's a site which lets you do remote maintenance. It lets you connect to a person's desktop.
Yep, I use a different solution to that.
Okay,
yep.
Well, this one's quite good because you can actually log in and create either corporate accounts or personal accounts. Dr. Ron and I have got free accounts each, and it just means you can put all the family computers into one account. And so when Mum rings up from the other side of town and says, I can't use my email, you can just log in and fix it for her without having to get in the car and drive all the way over the other side of town, or sister, or brother, or colleague, or whoever you want to do. And it's
But you
all
need to
free.
Have the software pre-installed on the foreign machine.
Yes, you do. And they can either download it from the site, you can direct them to it, or you can take it over on a memory stick.
All right, remind me to tell you another time about my solution to this problem.
All right, you can do it next week.
That's our website, Andrew.
Oh, don't do that to me.
I shall say it again slowly.
Okay, I'm ready now.
Logmein.com.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
We're still getting through all those App of the Week suggestions that we got 6 months ago when we ran our competition.
Yeah.
Still getting through them. This was a great app suggested by R. Frampton. White Note, he says, a great text and page layout app for the iPad with audio recording plus text and search and Dropbox integration. White Note's the ultimate notepad application. It's exclusively for the iPad. With this innovative tool, you can add free-form notes and drawings anywhere on the page and mix them in any way you want. You've got full control over fonts, line styles, colours, and you can document anything on your iPad.
That's our application, Andrew.
Fantastic.
For the iPad.
I like that idea.
It's White Note.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ah, the meatloaf!
Bond. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
This week's Odd Spot, Andrew. The United States government has formally responded to an online petition at the White House website denying any knowledge of extraterrestrial life.
You're kidding me.
The announcement came last week as a response to a submission on the We the People website, wherein the US government promises to respond to any petition with 5,000 or more signatures. Two recent petitions called for disclosure of government information on extraterrestrial life and an acknowledgement of any contact. The White House responded that there was no evidence that any life exists outside our planet.
What?
In addition, the US government said there is no credible information to suggest any evidence is being hidden from the public's
eye. So why don't they let you into Area 51 then? Or is that only for Steven Spielberg?
No, what they're saying is Area 51 doesn't exist. It's a Steven Spielberg invention.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's our odds.
Pray that there's intelligent life somewhere out in space, because there's not much down here on Earth.
Well, that's a Monty Python lyric.
Almost.
You just modified it a little bit to make it radio-friendly.
Absolutely.
That's our Odd Spot, Andrew.
And that's the show. Hey, Warlock, thank you for coming in and filling in on short notice for she who's not around at the moment.
No worries. Look forward to hearing the show next week.
Yeah, it's good. So she might be back next week. She's in the chat at the moment. So anyway, that's probably a good spot for her too at the moment. All right, next week, fingers crossed. Hopefully the planets will align. Dr. Ron?
Susan McLean.
Susan McLean.
Cyber safety expert.
Correct. And after that...
Lena will be back with her full report of... what is it? The GC Game Developers something or other?
The GC Game...
Yep.
Is it yours?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay. I thought it might have been there.
I can't think what it is that she's been at, some game conference thing.
All right. So, same time next week, guys. Thanks for joining us on Tech Talk Radio. Don't forget...
She's been rubbing shoulders with FBI agents.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, she'll have a good report next week.
Excellent. I look forward to it. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is where you can send us emails, log on. There's a form on our website. If not, when we go to air on Monday nights, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Come and visit us there. We love to have everyone join us on the show as we go to air. It's good fun. So, same time next week. Guys, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.